No.
Your autumn years, you could be an actor. You never know.
Oh,
go,
yeah.
Go do some...
Well, who knows? I mean, one of the
some
great
summer
actors,
stock.
You know, the father on Frasier just passed away.
Right, right.
And I mean, he's just so good.
Yeah.
You know, every time you see somebody like that...
It could be your calling, Dad. You never know.
Yeah.
It has been Watch This with Chris Earle. My guest today has been Paul Earle. Back again next week. And enjoy that WMFO sticker, Dad. You earned that today.
All right.
For the quiz. Good night. Coming up next, The Big Picture with Derek and Jake. MFO Medford 91.5. It is The Big Picture at 91.5 FM. I have to say that. It is The Big Picture.
We don't want to confuse people, Derek.
Right. What's the 91.5? Is there something else? It's just 91.5. What the
heck?
Is
that some like freeway I don't know about?
Is this a secret code that you're putting out? No, it is WMFO 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. I am Derek Gary. She is Shea Spillane. We are with you until 9 o'clock tonight, catching you up on everything that is happening in the world. And boy, it has been a busy news week. to say the least, it has been a...
Sarcasm is the spice of life.
Yeah, I'm sort of drowning in everything that's been happening over the last few days. This...
Oh, yeah. So much has been so overwhelming.
This... It's not... It's just... tough to keep track of everything that's going on when you've got as many stories breaking as we've had break.
Well, especially when you fall asleep during all of them.
Yeah, that's... Well, that's your problem. I don't fall asleep during the news. I'm like, oh my God, something's happening. I'm riveted.
I fall asleep during the news when nothing is happening.
This is not a nothing happening week. A lot of... So we got the Southwest Airlines. It's not a crash, but...
Comparatively, think about it. Compared to some of our other news weeks, how busy was it?
If you're measuring it by mass shooting or the latest Stormy Daniels revelations about Donald Trump...
I'm sorry, should we be measuring it some other way?
Yes, we should. We should be talking about... Because in terms of actual meaningful, important things that happened, this is a big week. And this is a week that I like to call Crazy Week, because every year...
Because everyone is doing their taxes at the last
time. I don't know. It's not the tax thing. But I don't know what it is about 420, which there's the 420 connotation, which is, hey, we're all going to get high and we're going to have a good time, and it's marijuana celebration.
But there's 2 days till that.
Because it's the code that the police use to identify marijuana. But
that's
then,
not actually why it's 420, though.
That's what I was always told.
It's... We can get into that.
No,
the reason that it's called 420 is that it's the most like minute reference. There was this group of teenagers at a public high school in California, and they had a pact that they would meet at 420 at this statue every day after school. School got out at like 3 something, and most of them usually had detention. So they'd all meet up at the statue at 4:20 p.m. because it was the right time for them to meet up and smoke pot.
Hmm.
And that is how, like, that's how the whole thing became a thing.
So where did this myth about the police code come
into it? It is the police code. That's the thing. Is the police code is based on that. This is the chicken that hatched before that egg.
The cops came to realize that they were down there every day at 4:20.
Because, well, that's the thing, is that everyone decided that, like, we can't say very loudly, oh my God, we're smoking pot, right? We're smoking pot at 4:20, like, or we're smoking pot right now. 4:20 became kind of the exactly that, the code. It was the 4:20 at 4:20.
Long time.
And that's how, I have one of my contributions for this segment, one of my contributions for this radio show. God, I'm tired. Sorry. I'm moving, guys. Please forgive me. But one of my contributions later explains part of that. But yeah, that's what 420 is.
Oh, cool.
It literally is based on 6 teenagers who like to get high after high school.
All the bad stuff starts in California. Can we just come to that agreement?
Amen.
But in addition to that, this is also the week of Hitler's birthday. Hitler was born on 4:20.
Yeah.
4:20 was Columbine.
He really messed up.
The Waco compound.
I would say
siege
Waco was this week.
Took place during this week. The Oklahoma City bombing took place during this week.
Not a great week.
It's not. This is a week
the
when
the world in general, other than everyone smoking pot at a certain time of day.
Everybody just seems to go a little bit nuts. And I think it might have something to do with the pollen in the air and the fact that it's getting warm and the days are longer after we've been cooped up inside all winter.
It's so weird that it's light outside right now.
You know how...
Like, driving here, I was like, am I super early instead of 3 minutes late? Like,
you know how the bears come out of hibernation angry? That's apparently we do the same thing. So, you know, be nice to each other this week. Don't go provoking anybody, because this is not the week to do it. Wait until next week, and then you can go back to being your typical Massachusetts jerk self.
Oh, thank goodness.
I'm just trying to look out for the listeners in my own special way.
Well, in local news, the state is owed more than $15 million by out-of-state drivers who use the Massachusetts Turnpike without EZ Pass transponders, and much of it will likely never be collected. The state transportation department confirmed to NBC Boston that since the cashless system replaced toll booths in October 2016, about $54 million has been collected from about 2 million out-of-state drivers who traveled Interstate 90 without transponders. Of the $15 million in unpaid tolls, the state can only force payment of about $2.8 million based on agreements with Maine and New Hampshire, in which drivers from those states can be blocked from renewing vehicle registrations unless they pay outstanding tolls. A spokesman says the potential losses were anticipated when the system was installed, and the state will continue to pursue all unpaid tolls, adding that MassDOT is on track with its revenue projections.
So you put up this system knowing full well how much money?
So they're losing, let's see, they're losing $15 million.
So you put this thing up.
Like $15 million is something I can't even fathom in terms of my life.
Oh, we're going to lose $15 million a year on this, but it's okay.
Whatever.
Because we're hitting our revenue targets.
We knew we were going to do that.
Yeah.
Like,
listen, if I was from another state and I got the letter from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts saying you owe us toll money, I would send them back a Xerox of me giving them the middle finger. I think that's the way that a lot of people look at it, which is if you're going to be stupid enough to not put up toll booths, we're not going to pay.
Well, and what's weird is like I had a show in New Hampshire this past weekend, and I was surprised by the fact that I had to stop and pay someone something.
Yeah.
Like, I'm used to just driving through and being like, yeah, flip the bird, maybe I'll pay you.
Yeah. I do love the new automated toll system because
for the convenience
you can drive from Boston to Manhattan and never have to stop.
Yeah.
Which is really nice. That's a big improvement over the way it used to be.
But you could always do that with an Easy Pass. That's the thing. It's like they're giving Easy Passes to people who couldn't be trusted with them is essentially what's happening.
Yeah.
Like it's
well, there's also nothing to stop you from driving on the road if you don't have one.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like it used to be that if you got to the toll, you didn't have the money, you were screwed.
Yeah.
Or you would get like a really big fine attached to your plate. And now it's just, catch me if you can.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm going to drive to Florida.
It's those people from Rhode Island. I just know it.
You Providence.
They're always working an angle down there.
Well, in national news, an island-wide blackout hit Puerto Rico today, knocking out power throughout the island 7 months after Hurricane Maria destroyed its electrical grid. Geraldo Quiñones López, a spokesman for the Puerto Rico Electric Power Authority, said this afternoon that there was 0% power generation on the entire island.
0%?
0%. Like, literally the entire island of Puerto Rico has no electricity. Think about that for a moment. That's like, I mean, that on a much smaller scale, that's like the entire city of Boston. I'm sorry, all of Metro Boston having no power. Think about that. But yeah, the breakdown affected the entire electrical system and generating plants. Crews are investigating it and say it could take 24 to 36 hours to fully restore power. And I felt this was an important story to have be the national story because, especially given that our president, like, forgot that Puerto Rico is part of our country.
Yeah.
Sit down and just, especially in our cell phone, internet-addicted society, think about having... You can't even charge the thing that's supposed to defibrillate you if you have a heart condition.
Everybody's like, got generators down there by now. A lot of people have generators.
But nonetheless, I mean, yeah, everyone has generators. Everyone's fighting over them and deciding what the baseline use for them is.
Yeah, well, if you have the generator, you rule the block is...
The new mafia.
Yes, they're generators are the new guns down in Puerto Rico. But Ned, I'm surprised no one's blamed the Russians for this, because that seems to be what happens with everything.
Well, I'm not, don't misunderstand me. I'm not blaming Trump.
No, but by tomorrow they may be like, it was the Russians. But my understanding of it is that they're putting in all brand new energy equipment across the island. That they're taking advantage of the fact that pretty much everything got washed away in the hurricane to completely upgrade the system. So who the heck is doing this that, you know, less than 6 months after you put the thing online, it's broken down and it doesn't work anymore?
That is fair.
Yeah.
Well, but...
0% generation.
The point is that if this was California or New York or Massachusetts, this wouldn't be happening right now.
There would be massive looting. The difference there in Puerto Rico is there's nothing to loot.
But no, I'm saying that it would be and a lot of it is that we can't get the resources we need to get there. The resources, both literally and figuratively, in terms of like talent that knows how to do this, but it's similar to, I mean, I've lived in, you know, I'm a comedian, I'm broke all the time, I live in terrible places a lot. When I lived near Skid Row, it's the same thing, where I'd look around and be like, if anyone was really trying hard and we have the right people coming in doing this, this wouldn't be an issue anymore. It wouldn't smell like poop all over 6th Street. And I feel like that's a similar situation to what we have here, which is that it could have been handled better. It could have... This shouldn't, especially 7 months after the...
But didn't we go through this whole thing where this company came in that said they could do it, and then they got thrown out because it was two guys, there was patronage involved, and they were going to go out and get some other company to come in and take care of this?
And this is exactly what I'm saying, is this wouldn't happen if it was... Think about, we live in a city where there's, what, 20 ridiculously reputable colleges, there's all these great hospitals, all these great law firms. If this happened in Boston, it would be taken care of like that. It would be taken care of immediately.
Well, it wouldn't, because
the Big Dig not being a great example, but
no, but I mean, you've got to consider the scale of this thing. I mean, they're starting from zero, but in Puerto Rico,
well,
basically.
That's what I'm saying. But at least it would have been, maybe not like that, but it would have been taken care of in a more rational and knowledgeable.
They would have had power back up in Longwood in a week. I know
that's
that.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, it would have been a much more thought out, okay, we got to fix this, 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 and this. And then once we fix those, we'll fix this, 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 and that. It's just frustrating.
And there a BU grad running that Commonwealth, whatever they are down there? Wasn't she on TV talking about how much she hates Trump and all the rest of that? I mean, it's just... This is supposed to be new equipment, all right? Whoever you've hired to engineer this has clearly not done the job well. And you might want to bring another firm in to take a look at what they're doing. Yes?
Fair.
I do spend some time floating around in the energy sector. I know a little bit of what goes on over there.
Oh, you nerd.
In world news, peace may be on its way to the Korean Peninsula. A South Korean official said on Tuesday that a peace treaty could be negotiated during an upcoming summit between South Korean President Moon Jae-in and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. President Donald Trump is encouraging both sides to make the move, and a new treaty could be announced as early as next week. President Trump is scheduled to meet with Kim Jong-un sometime this spring. We also found out that the new CIA director, Mike Pompeo, had a sit-down with Kim Jong-un, I guess, last week, and apparently went very well. So the situation on the peninsula is that there is still an active state of war between North Korea and South Korea. This is something that gets brought up every time the Koreas come up, because the Korean War did not end with peace. It ended with a ceasefire.
And it ended with pretty much everyone throwing their hands up in the air.
Yeah, they drew a line in the sand, and they put a 5-mile no man's land on either side of it, and they said, okay, nobody goes north or left, north or south of this parallel, and we're just going to walk away. You guys stay on your own side of the line and don't antagonize each other too much. And that's been the situation. You know, a ceasefire is not a peace agreement. This would be a very, very interesting development, particularly if it was something that I don't know I don't know that you could talk about the possibility of a unified Korea.
I think the most one can hope for is a hey, what up, dude? Korea. Like, and we're not on the same team, but we're cool with each other. Kind of like the Red Sox and the Mets. Just like, I don't like you, you don't like me, but we like each other better than some other things.
But I think it's a little bit stronger and deeper than that. And the one thing that the people on both sides of the 39th parallel have is that shared history of occupation by Japan and all of the horrors that they suffered during World War II and prior to World War II, and what remains of the Korean culture. So there are cultural links and historic links and value links between those two countries.
Which is always what's difficult in this situation. It's the same with Ireland and even with Great Britain, England, whatever you'd like to call it, and America, where there is, despite any animosity, there are definite links just between like baseline culturally, where it's strange to meet like a Northern Irish person and think, oh, your cheekbones are like mine.
Yeah.
And you also love potatoes.
Yeah. Like, you get to a certain point where it's like, you is us.
Yeah.
You know, and what are we really fighting about? Where this gets interesting, because I don't see either side willingly giving up power and willingly giving up its leadership structure for the sake of a unified Korea. The other thing I don't see happening is China having any of it, because China does not want a united Korea, a unified Korea that is friendly to the United States sitting on its border.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that China loves is that when it comes to the United States, there is an ocean between us and them and no way for us to get on that land without a direct landing.
Yeah, we don't have bosom buddies
right
bordering them.
And when it comes to Russia, you got to get over the wall. So yeah. Either way, China's pretty much...
I really want to see that wall. I won't lie.
China's pretty much protected from its enemies. But the Korean Peninsula is a strategic vulnerability, because they don't control that. It's one of the reasons why China really doesn't like the United States being involved with the South Korean military. And it's one of the reasons why China has quietly supported the Kim regime for all of these years, is because it gives them that little bit of security. Yes, you could get Americans into South Korea, but you got to get them past the 39th parallel to get them into China. And the North Koreans aren't going to let that happen. And the Chinese can always flood soldiers in to stop them, which is how we wound up with the ceasefire in the original Korean War. As China started sending their troops in, and the United States said, okay, enough. We're not going to war with China over this thing. So, but it'll be interesting to see. I mean, any kind of cooperation that gets rid of the nuclear program and brings North Korea out of its self-imposed dark ages.
This is absolutely unprecedented.
Yeah.
Like, this is... It almost seems like an Onion article, to be honest. Like,
if this goes the way that everyone hopes it will, imagine being a North Korean and suddenly discovering the 21st century. They're going to lose their minds. In sports news, cold and rain may be the Achilles heel for elite Kenyan runners. Desiree Linden became the first American woman, runner yes. to win the Boston Marathon in 33 years, with the slowest time for a women's winner since 1978. Linden was one of seven American women in the top 10 finishers. On the men's side, Yuki Kawauchi passed defending champion Jeffrey Kirui in Kenmore Square, claiming the first win for a Japanese man since 1987. Kawauchi later told ESPN, quote, "For me, it's the best conditions possible," end quote.
Well, okay, first of all, even though it was you have to take into consideration wind resistance, well, like, the part of the reason it took her so long, she probably would have killed it if it was a beautiful 58-degree day. But I did, it was crazy, because I was working at my day job while this was happening and watching them, and then having all of the volunteers and some of the runners come in afterwards, because my day job's a short tea right away. It was unbelievable. Like, it was really amazing. And it, I mean, yeah, it was, it took longer, but it should have. I mean, Desiree, that day, I was just, all I thought all day is, I can't believe people are running almost 24 miles right now.
Desiree Linden apparently was thinking of dropping out of the race pretty early on. Because the conditions were so difficult.
Yeah.
And she,
I honestly, part of me felt that they were just going to reschedule it, though. I know, I mean, it's...
You can't. Because you got people flying in from all over the country.
I was going to say, there's like, from all over the world.
The city's shut down for it. But she was running with Shailene Flanagan, who won the New York City Marathon last year, and took a break because Shailene went to use a porta potty, and so Desiree stopped and was just sort of running in place, waiting for Shailene to come back out, and the two of them got back into the race and kept going, and Flanagan was actually the one that pushed Desiree to go for it. And it's, you know, the thing about it is, for the Kenyans, they don't mind the altitude, they don't mind the heat, they don't mind dry, they may not mind wind, but
rain and sleet.
Rain and cold, not something that they're used to. Not something that you get as much of where they train.
Well, and that's, even you look at pictures of her, she is beyond baffled that she won. You can tell. And that's, well, what I loved is, like I said, I was working at my restaurant that day, and a lot of the people that came in were volunteers who, like, one of them, their job was to put the blankets on the marathon winners, or the marathon runners, after they crossed the finish line.
Which you needed on Monday.
Oh, yeah. And it's, you look at pictures of her, and she just is like, I'm cold and I'm confused. And I really just did this.
Yeah, like, what do you mean no one finished ahead of me?
Like, I'm the first one here. I stopped and everything.
Yeah.
But it's, it's good for her.
So if we can just keep having marathons where it's cold and rainy, maybe we can...
That's how America comes up first, is it being cold and rainy, which Mother Nature has been really helpful with that recently.
Yeah, but the other side
Even
of it is...
looking at the sky, it looks terrifying.
This is the second major U.S. marathon in a row won by an American woman, and we haven't seen that in more than 30 years. So it could be that the American women are making strides... certainly, I mean, the thing that stands out about it is that it was, for both the men and the women, the slowest times in many, many years. So that sort of Kenyan ability to get out front and just pace everybody else did not work this time around. But at the same time, these are two very strong victories for American women, and we may be seeing a new resurgence here. So let's hope.
I cannot complain about that. Speaking of a resurgence, in entertainment news, the Wu-Tang Clan wants James Comey to help retrieve their infamous Once Upon a Time in Shaolin album, which was once owned by Martin Shkreli. Two members of the legendary rap collective, Ghostface Killah, whose actual name is Dennis Gold, and Method Man, whose actual name is Clifford Smith, met the former FBI director yesterday while backstage at The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. They joked Comey could help get back their album, which is currently in the federal government's possession. The album, which was initially released as a one-of-a-kind copy in 2015, was considered the most expensive album ever purchased after Shkreli paid a cool $2 million for it at an auction. However, it was seized by the federal government following Shkreli's conviction on security fraud charges in August of 2017. Shkreli, who's nicknamed the Pharma Bro, was sentenced to 7 years in federal prison on March 9th. He was also ordered to fork over $7.3 million in assets, which included that Wu-Tang album, as well as his stake in Viera Pharmaceuticals, a Picasso painting, and an unreleased Lil Wayne album called The Carter Five.
I don't think James Comey has any kind of reach or too many people willing to do favors for him in the federal government right now. Maybe in a few years, Well, somebody with a long memory will be like, yeah, you were an okay guy.
Well, the thing is, I mean, with how corrupt our federal government is, it could even be a, hey, I have these, and if you know anything about hip hop, these guys have connections that are not the savoriest. You could say, I have these two hip hop guys. And
not
I know,
these guys.
And I know all this stuff about you. Maybe just give them these, their album.
No, these guys are a bunch of like middle class and upper class New York kids.
Well,
so.
the reason, are you kidding me? Method Man was not an upper class.
Method Man lived in the nice part of Staten Island.
There's a nice part of Staten Island.
I used to work with a stat rat, and they used to play Ding Dong Ditch at Method Man's house.
Well, oh my goodness. Well, yeah, once he could afford a good place on Staten Island.
I'm just saying, the whole like, there's a little bit of an exaggerated backstory with the Wu-Tang Clan.
Well, part of the reason that I was, how could I not break the law? But I know I'm closely connected to somebody who was actually Martin Shkreli's defense attorney. And I knew before the public knew that all of this was released.
Boy, did he whine like a bitch.
Oh, yes, yes, he did. But it was very interesting. I remember, you know, 2 years ago when he at first got convicted, that he had this in his possession, and having it come forth on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert was astounding and wonderful.
Can we just put it in the Smithsonian?
So I've just been sitting there like, I've had this tucked into my vest for so long, and I can finally actually openly talk about it.
can we just put it in the Smithsonian? That's
honestly,
a good...
Honestly, that's, I think, well, and...
I should think the Wu would be behind that.
And I mean, I love Wu-Tang Clan. Danny does too. Danny's my brother. What up? I love Wu-Tang Clan, and it's, I feel like even if they got it back, that's exactly what they do with it.
Yeah.
They're all rich as heck.
Yeah, they don't need the money.
Like, they don't need the money. It's the principle of the
Didn't they give all the money from that auction to charity?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I feel like they want it back just for the principle of the thing, and because this guy is a jerk, like, it's, I feel that's why they even made the, hey, can we get that back?
Well,
so that we can donate it to charity again.
It immediately became infamous when he won it.
Yeah.
It was and it immediately blew up. And I imagine the guys in the Wu-Tang Clan sitting there like, oh, not this guy. This isn't why we did this.
This isn't what we were going for.
We don't want this. What's he doing with that? No.
Where's Jesse Jackson? He was supposed to bid on this.
Yeah, that was one of the more amusing twists in the whole Martin Shkreli tale.
Oh,
well, now we got to figure out where the album is. We got to have the Wu-Tang Shaolin
album.
It's
in a storage locker somewhere in the Pentagon.
Yeah, there's a couple of Treasury agents smoking some fat blunts and throwing it on the turntable.
I was being like, yo, this is good. Yeah,
another Saturday night in Government Storage Center 573.
X-Gon, give it to you. Oh, no, sorry. That's where our fight is. I'm sorry, Wu-Tang Clan. I didn't mean to do that.
Speaking of our federal government, Tax Day proved too much to handle for the Internal Revenue Service's website on Tuesday. The site's direct pay section, which allows people to pay taxes directly from a bank account free of charge, went down on Tuesday morning and was out of commission until around 5 p.m. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin announced late Tuesday that e-filers would be given an extension as a result of the site's failure. Taxpayers could also opt to use debit or credit card payments, but those methods may come with additional charges. You have until midnight tonight to file your taxes electronically due to yesterday's failure. So Steven Mnuchin was kind enough to give us all an extra 24 hours.
Oh, that's so cute. I filed my taxes 2.5 months ago.
Yeah, well.
When I got my various tax forms.
Yeah.
A bunch of lazy butts.
That does nothing for me for the thousands of dollars that I'm handing over to the federal government once again this year.
Well, see, I always hand them over the course of the year, so I get a bonus for being alive come April.
Yeah.
I'd prefer to be, and I had to explain this to somebody yesterday, I'd prefer to be really broke the entire year and deal with it and then get a bonus for being a person, then be kind of broke for the entire year and then get charged for being a person. That's, and you know, different strokes, different folks, different. But I never understand. Like, I mean, I know, Derek, you have your reasons, especially, I mean, every person in a different financial situation has a different reason for doing what they do. But for me, I'd just rather be broke all the time and then be like, yay, yeah, a grand.
I haven't seen a refund since before Mitt Romney was the governor of Massachusetts. It's not like I'm making piles of money over here on the radio, kids. I'm not making piles of money anywhere. Not making any money over here. And it just drives me nuts every year. It's like, how much money have I already given you? And now here you are looking for more.
Well, even like looking at, I will say, I'm not to say that it doesn't irk me, because even I got my paycheck the other day and I'm looking at it and it is hundreds of dollars less than what I actually earned.
Yeah.
Because Social Security, which I'm never going to see.
Right.
I was born in 1986. I'm never seeing a dime of Social Security because we're overpopulated. State taxes, federal taxes.
No, you're never going to see a dime of Social Security because my generation is going to live to 130 and spend it and spend whatever crumbs the baby boomers decide to leave behind for us.
You bunch of jerks.
You're going to be paying to keep us going. And we're going to be kicking you down the stairs of the retirement home so we don't have to fight you for the benefits.
Well, but we'll be so much better at climbing up the stairs of the retirement home than you at that point. So, but yeah, federal, state, everything.
So you got 24 hours to finish.
Yeah, so hurry up, kids.
Keep filing your taxes.
Keep complaining about it on Facebook, and I'll keep making fun of you for it.
This is ridiculous, though. I mean, it's the IRS. You know, I understand if you just released like a new build of PlayerUnknown's Battleground or Fortnite with some new maps, and everybody across the world has decided to hit your servers at once. That's sort of unexpected and unusual behavior, and you can't pay enough money to keep a server at that level of readiness all the time because you go bankrupt. This is the IRS.
Now this is literally an anticipated date.
Yeah.
One date in 365 days.
You know this is...
Or 364, as the case may be this
you
year.
You know this is coming. Go call Jeff Bezos, get some extra cloud storage space and cloud computing space from Amazon for a week, and make sure the damn thing works.
And if you need some entertainment, use the Wu-Tang Clan album that Martin Shkreli bought. And listen to that while you do that.
They're a real problem, is what I'm saying. It's like, oh my gosh, there were a lot of people on the website on tax day. We didn't see that coming. Give me a break.
No, why? There's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
Here in Boston, 5-day forecast calls for a slight chance of spring. Slight chance of spring, yeah. Chase Belaine. Not tonight, though.
Slight being the operative word.
Keep your eyes out for some rain late, maybe even a few snowflakes here and there as temperatures fall back into the middle and lower 30s tomorrow. Ugh. We'll just leave it at that. Rain, cold, heavy rain, wind, everything you hate about April, all in one day. High of about 40 degrees, lows in the mid-30s tomorrow night. Friday, the last of the rain moves away. Mostly cloudy, temperatures rise to about 50 degrees. Lows in the mid-30s Friday night. Saturday, partly cloudy, highs in the low 50s. Lows falling back into the mid-30s on Saturday night. And Sunday, highs in the mid-50s. But we're still stuck in the mid-30s on Sunday night. Monday, we're getting back into the mid-50s. And after that, spring weather. Temperatures over 60.
Don't you toy with me.
Coming our way. By this time next week, we'll be talking about how balmy it is. We'll be like, wow.
I would say then we'll complain about being too hot.
Yeah, then we'll be like, oh, I gotta get the air conditioner out. I hate this time of year.
And the green grass grows all around, yeah. And the green grass grows all around.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. I'm Derek Gary. She's Shea Spillane. When we come back, did you hear all of the other stories that caught our attention this week here on WMFO Medford?
You buying a pork roast or pork chops? This is Sarah Beck for the U.S. Department of Agriculture with a few suggestions. Most stores carry a wide selection of pork cuts, so shop carefully and select the one that suits your needs best. High-quality, fresh pork will be grayish pink or darker in color. Also be sure the meat is firm and not pale, soft, or watery. And consider the amounts of fat and bone when you compare costs per pound of different pork cuts.
This is the sound of salmonella gyrating on your undercooked chicken. And it looks like mom might be taking it out a little early. Don't let salmonella get funky with your chicken. On average, 1 in 6 Americans will get a foodborne illness this year. So use a thermometer to cook each type of meat to the right temperature. Keep your family safe at foodsafety.gov. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Shay Spillane. As always, with me is my co-host, Derek Gary. We're going to be here with you till 9 o'clock, and we love hearing from you. So please give us a call at 855-915-WMFO. Now, one of the most fun parts of the program, which is Did You Hear?, where we basically try to make each other look like idiots if we don't know the news stories in the last week.
Doesn't take much to...
for me, I'm going to start out with Gronkowski.
The Rob...
Which is one of my favorite words.
The Rob Gronkowski?
The Rob Gronkowski.
The. Tight end for the New England Patriots has not been to the organized team activities. Raising speculation that he may not be back in a Patriots uniform next year.
That actually wasn't even what I was going to talk about.
Really?
It's way more ridiculous. New England Patriots tight end Robert Gronkowski announced today that he bought a substantial stake in Gronkowski, a 3-year-old colt that will be racing in the Kentucky Derby.
Oh, that's the that's the horse that was named for him. Interesting.
Yes. He said in a statement on his blog, "This horse is a winner, and I love a winner. When I heard about the racehorse being named after me, I started watching and got really stoked when he started winning. He's won his last 3 races and is now headed to the Derby. I'm all in. Welcome to the Gronk family. Gronkowski the horse."
Not bad.
I cannot laugh.
Is this why
that was the most willpower I've ever had not laughing. Like, this is part of why I love him, is I just look and I'm like, you're like one of the dum-dums I used to bang in college. Like, that's the part of the reason I love
Gronkowski. Is this why he hasn't been at the workouts? Because he's
been too busy watching a horse named after
playing
him.
Around with the horse. he's having fun with a horse instead of, hey, whatever. Tom Brady might not.
And I mean, he's the Gronk. Come on.
Tom Brady might not be coming back either. So
I know. If ever there was a rebuilding year.
Yeah. Here's the thing.
We already lost, I want to say, Jan Popper.
Everybody. We lost everybody. Everybody was good.
Everyone is.
We still got Chris Hogan. We still got Julian Edelman. We still got, yeah, there's good players left on the team. But the Brady thing broke last night, and basically,
yeah, I saw that.
Basically, what the story is, because everybody in Boston has been freaking out about
this.
Wait,
what the
whole
story is that he's in his 40s and has been doing this since I was in high school, and it's ridiculous he's still doing it because he's a millionaire, married to a supermodel, and he could just like hang out on a beach in Cabo forever and be fine.
What the story is that he has not made any sort of a commitment to the New England Patriots. He has neither, in writing or verbally, said to anybody, I will be playing again next year. Now, this is a big deal because it is 1 week before the NFL draft. And if Tom Brady is not coming back to the team,
then we need a new quarterback.
Right. Because the only quarterback,
new, like, ringer, like, that has to be our first round draft pick, yeah, is a new quarterback.
The only quarterback on your roster is now Brian Hoyer. And let me tell you, you're not going too far with that guy. So it would be nice.
I'm sorry, did that illustrate properly?
It would be nice. People who are close to Brady have all said he's going to play next year. Apparently, the intention is that he's going to play, but who knows? And as a matter of professional courtesy, and as a matter of being a team player, you would expect that by this stage of the game, Brady would have said something to somebody.
Honestly, that's what surprises me the most, is that he's not saying anything in either direction, especially because, don't get me wrong, I mean, if not the best, one of the best quarterbacks of all time. But that being said, he wouldn't be who he was if he didn't come into the Patriots franchise,
right,
at exactly the time that he did, exactly when we needed him, and be a leader for other. We were just talking about horses. He literally bred a lot of players to work with this team. It's part of what made me like football when, you know, I'm a baseball girl.
Yeah.
But, like, Tom Brady's leadership made me like football, and only because that franchise gave him the ability to do so. And you'd think that he'd have the respect for what they allowed him to do and how high they allowed him to rise.
Well,
to give them a heads up. It's just like when someone walks out instead of giving 2 weeks notice at a job, you know,
he's also been,
come on, man, you owe them this much.
He's also been playing long enough.
They've been paying your rent for your Escalade.
Think about this. He's been playing long enough.
That you got when I was in high school and I'm almost 32.
That little kids who idolized him when they were like 4 and 5 years old now have the opportunity to play with him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I mean, there's that. I mean, I don't think it gets much better than that.
I wouldn't be surprised if Gronkowski was watching him. I mean, Gronkowski's a couple years younger than me. I was watching Tom Brady when I was in high school. We used to stalk him when he lived in Marina Bay and be like, oh, my God, is that the MVP Escalade? Like, that's a... Like, Gronkowski probably looked up to him when he was playing at Arizona.
Chris Earle used to hang out with him. You know this. But Chris Earle, host of... Watch this.
That's the only reason I touch Chris Earle. Just to, like, contact high, you know?
But here's the thing. Knowing what we know about Tom Brady up here, even if he is furious with Bill Belichick and furious with the organization over the whole Guerrero thing last season, I don't see Tom Brady as a burn-your-bridges guy walking out the door. I don't see Tom Brady sitting back and not saying anything to the team, and then a couple of days after the draft being like, I'm going to retire. That's not Tom Brady. That's not who he is. So there's probably no need for concern with this, except that it's one of those curious variables.
Well, it's just like when you're dating somebody and instead of telling you how they feel, they just sit and let you lay in wait.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what this is, which is just that it's just having someone want to keep you baited and waiting. I was about to say, like, we are Tom Brady, like, this area of the country is Tom Brady. But then again, I thought that about Johnny Damon, and then he shaved off his beard and cut his hair and went to the Yankees.
Yeah.
So
maybe that's Brady's plan. He's going to go play for the Yankees this season.
One never can tell.
We'll turn our backs on him immediately if that happens. This is about as soft a ball as I am ever going to toss you.
Oh, it's going to be horrible because I'm not going to get it.
If you don't get this, you're fired. If you don't get this, this is the last time Shea Spillane is ever on the Big Picture.
That's a hardy.
That's how soft this softball is.
Okay.
You should probably be able to guess what it's going to be by me telling you how soft this softball is.
I don't want to give away my things that I was going to bring up.
Yeah, but this is the softest softball of all softballs.
Well, it's well, I would say that it's the thing that we were going to talk about tonight.
No, but it's another national news story that was pretty big.
You already brought up Pompeo. Am I really fired if I don't get this?
I haven't even given you the clue yet. I'm trying to get you to guess what the clue is going
to
be.
Something to do with Parkland. I have something for that.
No.
Come
on. This is
Switzerland?
No, this is as big as it gets. This was like the number one story last night, today.
You act as though I'm not constantly working.
All forms of media.
Barbara
Bush.
Yeah, okay.
Yes,
Barbara Bush.
See?
Yes. Jim McGrath, a spokesman for the Bush family, confirmed Barbara Bush has died at age 92. She was married. Get this. This is what, like, blows my mind. She was married for 73 years.
Well, 72 is what I heard.
73.
73?
Yep. Confirmed, like, just before I got here.
Longest married presidential couple in United States history.
Like, seriously. And she's also the first woman ever to be both a first lady and a mother of a president.
Second. Abigail Adams.
Well, I don't really count them.
Well, you should, because that's. But she was the. She's only one of two in that regard. So.
Well, she's the. I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. She's the first modern woman.
You can
to
say that.
Be
yes.
Both the like, and 73 years. Can you imagine being with somebody for that long? Like, I mean, and she died. They got married when they were teenagers.
She was 19 when they got married.
Yeah.
And he was 20.
Like, I can't, whenever I talk to my parents about getting married, that my parents got married when they were 23, which they're, of course, divorced now, because, of course, they are.
Yeah. Well, they didn't get married in 1945, unlike the Bushes, so.
They get married in 1976, which is why I always laugh when people talk about the bicentennial. Anyways, I remember them saying, like, oh, like, yeah, we got married too young. And looking at this, I'm like, oh, my goodness, they stayed together for 73 years. That's longer than most people live.
That's true. That's 1945 for you. Here's an interesting note. George Bush was the only man that ever kissed Barbara Bush.
What?
He was her first kiss.
And last, probably.
And according to him, she was his first kiss. The two of them, they're what,
but
they're
but
like
was,
high.
But was she his only kiss? Is the question?
Yes, that's what everybody seems to think. That in 73,
they do. I will say. I mean, I've always thought the Bushes, despite their ridiculous political leanings, I've always thought they were very cute.
She was.
I mean, it's weird. I hated George W. until Trump became president.
Yeah.
And I looked and was like, he is kind of adorable.
A lot of people are reevaluating that history. All those years that I spent saying, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. It's not that bad.
Well, one of my favorite skits of anything ever is there was a Family Guy skit where. Brian, you know, they do the cutaways, and Brian says, I'm the one that told George W. about 9/11. And he goes out to a treehouse, and he goes, hey, Mr. President, there's been a terrorist attack in New York City. He goes, go away, I'm reading Super Fudge.
I remember that.
No, like, a bunch of people have died. Terrorists crashed planes into buildings. He's like, don't make me do stuff. At the time, I remember I was 18 and just sitting there being like, this dummy. But looking back there, I mean, it's the same as Bill Clinton, where at the time we were like, how could you sleep with an intern?
Yeah.
And looking back, we're all like, it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
compared to what we're dealing with now.
Well, you know, Trump didn't do that in the White House. And, you know, everybody there was of age and consenting and able to consent. So, but back to Barbara Bush. Before your time, somewhat, I remember the Bush presidency quite well, and I remember...
Oh, that's the first president I remember being president.
And I remember Barbara Bush quite well, and one of the things... There were a couple of things about Barbara Bush. Barbara Bush had that sort of, even though she was a Texan, she had that sort of old Yankee stoicism about her.
Absolutely.
And she was unflappable. She was a class act, but she also had a vicious sense of humor behind the scenes. Everybody loved her. She was not as showy of a first lady as a Nancy Reagan or as a Hillary Clinton.
Hillary Clinton, yeah.
But she was constantly traveling around the country, traveling around the world, giving of her time, giving of her energy, championing the cause of literacy, which she believed in because she felt that literacy was the foundation to giving everybody an opportunity to succeed in this country.
Well, and the thing is, even though she was a Texan, technically, there was a Bush, I forget if it was George W. or George H.W.'s birthplace that was on Adam Street in Milton here. And it's a beautiful house, by the way. And it's got a gorgeous view of Boston and the southern points of Boston from it. But I think that's the thing. I've always, I was a child when the first Bush presidency was happening. But it's the first one that I was born during Reagan years, and even he didn't remember those.
Barbara apparently, by the way, was pro-choice and pro-
But that's, well, I always, I always had like a good feeling in my heart about it, even though I was, a child. But that doesn't mean, my parents were good about exposing us to things.
Yeah.
Appropriately enough.
She spoke at Wellesley College commencement, despite the protests of the progressive student body over there, brought Reza Gorbachev along with her, something that... if Putin were married, I don't think you'd ever see happen in the United States today. But during her speech, she said something that I thought was particularly good advice and really sort of speaks to who Barbara was outside of her public life. And what she said was this: at the end of your life, you will never regret not having passed one more test, winning one more verdict, or not closing one more deal. You will regret time not spent with a husband, a child, a friend, or a parent. Mm. That's Barbara Bush. That's
a good egg right there.
Yeah, that's who she was. And it's
God, now I feel like anything I say after this is going to be inconsequential.
Yeah.
Well, here's something I think that Barbara Bush would find funny then. Switzerland.
Switzerland. Switzerland. They're the Swiss, right?
Good chocolate.
They make those army knives?
Yeah, those good knives.
Switzerland. Home of Davos. Davos isn't going on right now, so that's not it. Switzerland, I don't know.
The Trump administration has made some headway on one of his biggest challenges.
War with Switzerland?
Ahead of Trump's meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un later this spring in finding a suitable location for the summit.
Well, there's no way they're letting Kim Jong-un in
Switzerland. A senior U.S. official told NBC News today that a number of locations have already been ruled out, including North Korea's capital, Pyongyang, as well as Beijing and Mongolia, all of which raise security concerns. U.S. officials are instead pushing for a more neutral location, preferably in Europe, with Switzerland among the top choices.
Do the Swiss know about this?
Switzerland is always the, we're cool. We're just going to sit here and be rich and not get involved and stuff.
Yeah. They're going to be like, no.
That's why I wanted to include this story. It's just.
Get out.
Oh, my goodness. And the funny thing is, I've been to Switzerland like 5 times, but only their airport. It's one of the richest, most expensive places in the world, but it always is the cheapest layover if any time I've traveled to Europe, and which I'm always looking for the cheapest layover. But yeah, Joel, don't look at me that way. I know that came out completely wrong. But it's just so ironic to me that... Of course it's Switzerland. They're like, wait, what what stupid anecdote can we use? Like, what cliche is out there that there, should be the place?
There's no way this is going to happen in Switzerland.
I love
there's no
so
way
hard
this is going to happen in Switzerland.
But it's just insane. Like, that's, I opened this, I thought it was a fake news story.
Yeah.
Like, and I confirmed it with five other news sources and was like, they're really considering Switzerland, even though this is total cliche and it's become almost a joke amongst, I mean, it's become not a proverb. What's the word I'm looking for? It's become
a cliche.
Like a cliche.
Yeah.
But something else. It's almost become a saying where, say, you're in a fight.